He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right. Big guest in the house tonight. There's very few people that I've yet to get on the podcast, and I'm very, very pleased and happy to have Aaron Corcoran on the podcast tonight. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Awesome. Glad to be here.
So I always start them the same way, and the way I start them is, tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
Oh, God, I can't even remember the first time. I think I came across, you know, info about it on the grip board after I started getting into grip. And it was not long after I started grip. But I don't remember the first person I saw. YouTube wasn't really commonly available yet at that point.
Mm-hmm. What year was that about, could you say?
2006.
Okay, cool. Did you see World's Strongest Man from the late 70s? That's a lot of people's answers, yeah. Where they said like Kaz was bending it over his head and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that, but it's not quite the same as unbraced bending, which is what I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I started with the Iron Mind bag of nails and, you know, the white and the green nail or something. I think that was all I could do initially.
No way.
Yeah. Couldn't bend the yellow. I couldn't get it under my chin. It was too long.
At this time, what were you attempting to bend it? Double underhand,
yeah.
Or double overhand? Or were you
double
just
overhand?
Way possible.
Double overhand. Yeah.
Okay. And who were you seeing on the grip board that was bending double overhand at that time?
I think Pat Pavlidis was one of the ones I was seeing who was, you know, the main impetus for that mm-hmm. style, and he was bending, you know, some ridiculous stuff. So
like the Hall brothers or something like that. I hear stories of those guys.
I can't remember if they were still on the board at that point. It was mid 2006.
Mm-hmm. And what led you into grip in the first place? Like,
I totally stumbled on it.
Oh yeah.
I was a high school and college athlete, and then I had a career ending injury just out of college that led to a 9-year layoff. And cool. I was just starting to train again when one of my coworkers showed me one of those hand dyno gyroscope things. He's like, check this out. He let me borrow it for a few days, and you know, the feeling that it that it gave me in my hands and forearms, you know, the strength gains just in a few days reminded me of what it was like to be really strong. And so I started looking up grip stuff and just stumbled on the grip board, and away I went.
That's awesome. Could you explain what did he actually give you? Was it like the rubber cylinder? Is that what you're talking about?
Or like, no, like the hand gyros. They're like a power ball, I think is what they're called. And you just kind of spin it up, and then you work against the centripetal force to kind of work your hand and your forearm and your wrist and stuff like that.
Huh. I can't picture what that is. I'm going to look that up after.
Yeah, they're called power balls.
Okay, cool. And so you said that you were high school and college athlete. You mind getting into what you did? I always talk about people's like athletic upbringing, so to speak.
Sure. High school, I did football and track. Track, I was All-American. I think I was ranked as high as number 2 in the country in discus. My senior year, I was ranked 9th. My junior year, multi-time state champion in discus and shot put. And then college, I went to University of Arizona on a track scholarship, and I threw discus and hammer for them.
Nice.
And was All-American in the hammer and the 35 pound weight throw, which is the indoor event for the hammer.
Gotcha. Wow. And you said you had an injury that put training on hold for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Just out of college, helping someone move. I was at my all time strongest and just freak injury, helping somebody move. I did a full rupture of my L5 S1 disc. And that was it. Oh, yeah. No more strength sports for a while.
Yeah. I feel like that. I hear stories like that. As a guy that was helping me train for the strongman thing was talking about, he was showing me in his bicep where he's tore his bicep. And I said, oh, how'd you do that? You know, figuring it was like, you know, from, and he's like, oh, I was moving wood out of somebody's truck. It was like, it wasn't even anything from training.
Yeah. Yeah. I tore my bicep tendon off the bone last year in April. We got a new dog and the dog got out and I was trying to catch it and I ripped the bicep off.
Yeah. Jesus. I guess that's like Murphy's Law or something, like extremely strong people that are, you know, getting hurt by these freak things.
Yeah, it happens.
So tell me about the progression of the bending. Obviously you got that bag of nails and you got white and green. So obviously you caught the bug. So how did you progress from those initial bag of nails until the major stuff that you wound up taking down years later?
I think that like once I could get the bars under my chin and get the rough technique, stuff started progressing a little faster. And from those first bends to my first red nail, I think was 3 weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, from there I was getting pretty decent rudimentary technique and it just kept going up the longer I trained it.
Mm-hmm. Now, has that always been the case like for you with physical endeavors? Like what did you always take to things like pretty quickly if it involved like using your body, so to speak?
Yeah, strength stuff I always was really good at. I benched 300 as a freshman in high school. I, you know, did 405 as a junior. I cleaned 385 as a junior in high school. 465 clean and jerk in college. After college, I think my best bench was 550. My best squat was 850. My best dead was 865. And, you know, I just was good with strength stuff. I was good with Highland Games, with throwing, with anything explosive, strong, I was good at.
And what were you weighing those times? Like 250, something in there or less?
Which one?
For like those upper upper deadlifts. Just out of curiosity.
The upper end of the highest strength stuff that I did, I think I was weighing around 308.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm 6 foot, so it's pretty decent amount on my frame.
That's a big dude at 6 foot for sure.
Yeah.
So were you competing like in powerlifting and Olympic lifting?
No, just gym training.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I squatted like seven, low sevens in college just to throw far, and was, you know, cleaning ridiculous stuff and snatching ridiculous stuff. And, I think I had a 38 inch vertical, standing vertical at 265, which was the weight I threw at. So
wow.
It was just really explosive and just doing gym stuff.
I had no idea. Like, I gotta be honest about the connection to like throwing sports and ultra strength. Like until I met the grip people and the steel bending people and a lot of people coming from Highland Games and stuff like that, I, you know, it's like, I was so naive to like the level of strength that throwing athletes had. It's wild.
It's ridiculous. It's like a whole nother level generally for the for the elite guys, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it seems that way. What a friend of mine that you know we've met through the steel bending and stuff like this. This guy Josh Goldthorpe, he's a Highland Games guy, and he's on a tear for all styles of bending. Really, he's up in Canada, just a little bit above Seattle, and but he's crushing steel, double overhand, and in every way, to be honest. But his background is Highland Games, and it's been really cool to see his progress in just like maybe a year and a half or something like that.
That's awesome.
Just doing such good bending.
Yeah, I was one of the guys I threw with in college in track. He just, I think this last weekend, won the world championship for masters in Highland Games. Andrew Hobson. Yeah, it's, you know, explosive sports. They're fun.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So you took out the red nail. Did you cert it right away, or what was the process back then at that time?
I didn't cert it right away. I don't think I certed it until like 2007. Maybe 2008. I think it was 2007. But by the time I certed it, I think I was at like definitely an FBBC shiny, maybe a cut down shiny.
Okay.
Yeah. By that point. And I didn't like training at that point with Iron Mind pads because I liked leathers more. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the limiting factor. I think I only trained with Iron Mind pads for like a week before I went and certed.
Just to do the thing.
Yeah. Later on, I started using them more, but early in the game, I was more with leathers until my hands really toughened up a lot.
Did you wind up using them later on just because of more of a challenge, just harder on the hands, or?
I started using them more later on. because the bars would punch through less.
Oh, okay.
With the leathers, I would punch through multiple layers of leather on each bend. So I think my biggest bends, I was doing Iron Mind wraps plus a 4-inch long leather piece over that.
Gotcha.
As my main bend. Mm-hmm. Just to get a little bit bigger diameter and kind of protect the hands a little bit.
Yep.
But yeah, I got to where I was bending over, like I had my index fingers on the bar, so not on the wrap, and I was bending over those. So those got really tough and beefy. And when I was bending some of the bigger stuff, I could crush a red nail from 3-inch barehanded. Down to like under an inch.
Hey, that's a cool one. I'd heard about a lot of stuff that you'd done, but I hadn't heard about that. That's cool. I like all the barehanded stuff is so gnarly. It's cool.
It was fun to show off with that.
yeah. Do you know who I know you're not so much up on what's going on these days, but are you aware of a Russian guy named Bat Tibolov by any chance?
The name sounds familiar.
So Bat is exclusively, as far as I know, anything he posts is all barehanded, and he did a red nail barehanded last year, and then also a bunch of Horito bolts, which are like tough stainless bolts, and all barehanded, started double underhand and finished double.
That's ridiculous.
It's insane.
Yeah, I was never much on kinking them because I didn't really enjoy the underhand very much. I had a bad wrist injury in college that made underhand hurt way too much, but I could reverse bend decently. And I think the biggest I reverse bent barehand was probably like a 1/4-inch, like grade 2 bolt, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the other stuff. So what about with not barehand, but regular, did you get much into reverse bending as well?
A little bit. I never got a red nail, but I think I got like maybe a 6-inch 1/4 square.
Oh, so wow.
Not far from red.
Yeah.
But I never really got into it as my primary. You know, honestly, the bending, when I was doing it, I enjoyed it, but mostly it was to win contests.
All right.
Because it was still, you know, a regular event in almost every big contest at that point.
You're talking grip contests.
Grip contest, not okay. Just strictly bending contest, but regular bending contests. It was a standard event on almost every one. So it was just a means to an end at that point.
Interesting. So it wasn't so much the community kind of pushing each other on the grip board.
It was that too, but
okay.
Yeah.
And there, what was there for cert options, really? Just Fat Bastard, Red, the Iron Mind? Was Bender's Battlefield the thing when you were bending, or?
Bender's Battlefield kind of came along a little later. Like, okay. I don't remember if it started when I was still bending, but it was around, you know, after I kind of stopped bending for a while before it, before they had the issues that ended the site.
Uh-huh.
I think I was a mod on there as well.
Oh, gotcha. And who were some of the guys on the board at the time that were sort of like your bending peers?
Well,
if you can remember,
there was a guy named who went by the name Boya.
Oh yeah, I've seen a double underhand guy, right?
He could do all the styles. He was He was decent in all the styles. You know, Jed was still bending at that point. There was a variety of people. I couldn't probably name all the main ones though. What's his name? Ben. His last name's escaping me right at the moment. He was still bending quite a bit.
Okay.
I can't think of his last name right now, but yeah, you know, it was a good bending community on the grip board. Eric yeah. Milfeld was still bending at that point, and he was doing a lot of the steel rating for us for the bigger stuff. So we'd send him bars and he'd rate it and we'd get him back. That was before I built my own rating rig. It was a pretty good community.
Cool. And so
Gaza was another one that was up there as a peer.
So what's your thinking on that whole situation with Gaza? Do you feel like everything that he did is legit, or it kind of seems like a mystery somewhat?
I think that it's a mystery.
Okay.
That's a good name for it. I think that his later stuff towards the end was probably 100% BS.
Okay.
But I think earlier in the game, he was probably bending the stuff he was saying he was bending.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, I guess this, maybe when I had Derek on the second time, whatever it was, Gaza came up and I had done as much research as I could. I wish there was actually like enough interest in steel bending beyond like, you know, 500 people globally or something to like fund a documentary on Gaza, because I feel like the whole thing is so interesting and his videos are just like insane. And I just would like to like have some in, like have Vice do a piece on Gaza because
totally.
It's just so interesting, but there's no real demand for it. But,
you know, I corresponded with him quite a bit. I sent him steel, you know, for him to bend for video proof, et cetera. And oftentimes the steel would not get bent.
Okay. Okay.
So at least not the bigger stuff.
Right,
and then he would say, yeah, I bent it, but my video camera was broken or, you know, whatever the reason.
Yeah.
So it was unclear, really, whether he was as strong as he was saying he was or not. I think that some of his training techniques had merit, but, you know, you have to really go into kind of a crazy zone and only do the bending in order to make that work.
Right. Because I chatted with Derek about it a little bit on this one episode. And then this guy from the UK reaches out to me and is like, yeah, I was there. Like, I'm in the background on those videos and they're all legit and stuff. So it's like, it just, because other guys have been like, no, very legitimate guys, I would believe their stance on what they say regarding steel bending. They're like, no, it's absolutely nonsense. And so it remains a mystery. It's funny. And I suppose anyone that like pokes a raw nerve in their tooth with like a fork to get fired up is
yeah,
somewhat of a mystery.
Breaks their wrist, you know, bending and still is bending. Yeah.
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 So you obviously progressed pretty fast. Thinking back, what are some of the bends that you were most proud of that you took down while you were bending?
You know, that's a good question. Some of the ones that I think that I can appreciate the most, you know, now 10 years later, one was the Bastard through Mag Bastard in under 5 minutes.
Whoa. Okay, cool.
So Bastard, Big Bastard, Huge Bastard, Grand Bastard, Magnificent Bastard, all in a 5 minute time frame.
Whoa, that's one I'm unaware of too. Cool.
I think I'm the only one who's ever attempted that. And I was
so can you say the lengths on it? Was it, so that's 7, 6.5 down to what?
To 5.
Wow.
Yeah. And doing the 5-inch one last. Mm-hmm. That was hard. I think I was bending big grade eights at that point when I did that. And the stamina portion of that was hard. Another one I'm really proud of was, it was not a cert bend, but it was some steel that I, you know, acquired, and it was 11/32 stainless.
Wow. Okay. So
7-inch by 11/32 yeah. Stainless. And I think I had it rated, and to get it to 30 degrees, it was like 680 or something. It was like a big grade eight, but the mm-hmm. finish was worse. Uh-huh. To crush it down.
Is that on YouTube? Is that
I think Derek has that on YouTube.
Okay.
Derek's account, because he was there videoing.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen that one.
6-inch big grade eight is up there.
Yeah.
6.5-inch by 5/16 stainless square would be up there.
God. That's awful.
And probably the most gnarly looking one that I did was a piece of steel that Paul Knight sent me. And it was 6-inch by 3/8 square steel. No idea what kind of steel, but I bent that. He's and you know, he was a pretty strong bender too. And he was like, yeah, I can't do anything with this. And he sent me a piece and I bent that, you know, to where the ends are about 1 inch apart. And it's probably the most awesome looking piece that I bent.
Yeah.
And it was hard.
That's cool. Jeez, that sounds brutal. So when you were bending the most, what was like a normal training week looking like for you? Were you doing bending days and then regular lifting days, or were you just like basically doing all bending? Like, what was your training schedule like at that time?
So when I was bending the biggest stuff, I was, you know, not just bending. I was chasing other grip things. I was a number four closer, you know, at that point when I was bending the big stuff. You know, lower level fours with the parallel set. Mm-hmm. I was chasing big pinches, you know, with the Euro and some of the other things to get me higher in contests. So I was really only bending about once every 10 days.
Okay, interesting.
And that was about the most I could recover from.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bending session would generally be, you know, maybe a little bit of volume work with some overlength stuff.
Okay.
So like if I'm training for a 7-inch bar, I would have 7.5-inch bars that I would do some hard volume work with, you know, maybe 5 of those and one of them might take, you know, 3 minutes to do if I push hard. And then 1 to 2 hard bends where it's like, you know, my whatever length I'm shooting for, if I'm training for a contest or something like that, if I'm doing 7-inch or 6-inch bars, it would be shooting for something that would take me around 5 minutes or 6 minutes and be super hard to do in that time.
Yeah.
And that was mostly it. Not a lot of volume, really. Uh-huh. Pretty minimal volume, but lots of good time under tension.
Yeah.
To kind of hit it. Yeah.
That makes sense because, I mean, you might be the first, that might be the longest like gap anyone has talked to me about, like between bending sessions, because everybody just gets so into it that they're like, yeah, I'm doing it every other day, you know, and like totally breaking themselves down.
It didn't start like that, but that's where I got to. And, you know, my regular lifting, I do best with about once a week. So really? Generally it's a full body once a week or once every 7 to 10 days kind of training to, you know, I hit it hard and then I get better through recovery.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I had my best gains. So it just makes sense.
That's cool to hear you say that actually, because I've been really into listening to another podcast, Marty Gallagher's podcast. Are you familiar with Marty Gallagher?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like 2 days a week, max, like stop messing around with all this like volley, like don't overdo it. And I'm a guy that like, I like to do this stuff, you know? So it's like hard not to do it a lot, but it's like, especially with getting back into bending, it's like it's been told to me by guys I should listen to more and stuff. It's just like, the secret is really making sure you're fully, fully recovered before you try anything significant. And it's like,
it's a brutal, attack on your nervous system to do bending. And that takes the longest to recover. So, you know, if you can be fully rested, then you're going to bend bigger stuff for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And were you doing anything in your regular strength training that was specific to trying to increase bending strength? Cause I always hear mixed stuff about this. Some guys are just like, no, bend more. Some guys are like bench and this and that, or overhead press.
You know, I wasn't doing a lot of serious other lifting type training at that time. I think, you know, to help my kink, I was doing the overlength stuff and I was doing micro progressions a couple of different ways over the years. One way was taping pieces together and going off the cross-sectional area as my incremental, you know? So I might have a piece that I'm bending where it was a 7.5-inch edge in with like, you know, a red nail tape to it, or, you know, something like a 1/4-inch plus 3/16 square or something like that in order to get a micro progression. And I was doing some of that. Later on, I experimented with machined bars where, you know, I'd machine them down the center section and do small increments that way. There were a number of ways that I tried different progressions and that worked really well.
That's cool. You said like a lot of this was to just train for grip contests. What were some of the contests that were going on at that time, or at least some of the ones that are memorable to you?
I think I went to one of the ones in Michigan that Don held.
Don Larkin.
Yeah. I don't remember which number it was, but that would have been probably around 2007 or 2008 time frame. Uh-huh. I think I was at around like a 6-inch edge in at that point. And that was a really tough bending contest. He actually ran that with the whole grip contest. And then the bending portion of the grip contest was a separate contest as well.
Oh, cool.
So it had a separate trophy. It had a $500 prize,
wow,
you know, et cetera. And then he had some other stuff. If you bent it, he would give you $50. And of course I went home with all the money. But that was a good one. The Backyard Bastard Bashes that they put on for FBBC were really awesome. I went to, I think, one of those, BBB3, up there, and did pretty good. Yeah, and then, you know, some of my own that I put on down here in Arizona were pretty awesome too for bending. I think the first one I put on, I bent a big grade 8 in that one, as well as a 5.5-inch edging.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
And were your contests a combination of grip and bending?
Yeah.
What were some of the events? Like, take me through like one of the contests, if you remember the events.
You know, I try to change it up a little bit here and there, but a standard was grippers, like Euro pinch, okay, axle deadlift.
Cool.
You know, things like that would be standard events in most of my contests. Sometimes I'd run a medley. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd do, you know, a levering event or, you know, something else. But it was usually like grippers, pinch, bending, and some kind of supporting thing like axle.
Nice. And that those were pretty well, those had pretty well turnout, right? I feel like I've read and heard people speak really highly of those even to this day, it seems like.
Yeah. I was still running contests up until 2019.
Oh, cool.
I ran the Southwest Regionals the last couple of years. We changed the name to that. Mm-hmm. And had really good turnout. Yeah.
Sweet. That's awesome. So I usually talk to people about like mental aspects of bending or training. Do you have anything to say on like the mental battle that's involved with the steel bending?
Yeah. You know, you got to commit. You can't do it halfway.
Yeah, for sure.
you gotta see it in your mind, and you got to commit 100% when you're bending hard. I used visualization exercises. I used, you know, everything at my disposal that I could think of to get better. So anything I bent, I'd already bent in my mind multiple times before I even attempted it.
Yeah.
And I usually didn't try to bend anything that I would fail at. You know, it would always be at that ragged edge of I can do this, but I wouldn't bend something just to fail.
That's interesting to hear you say that, just because the more I study like lifters of, let's say, just like strength athletes of all kinds, it's like so many of the greats talk about exactly what you just said of like really trying to never miss, you know, to just be on that fine razor edge of like the most you could do before failure, but not dipping over into missing any lifts or, you know,
yeah,
in this case bends. That's pretty interesting.
It works. It works really well.
Yeah, seems like it. So one of the things that like I always kind of chat about was like the idea of like steel bending. When I got into it, I was sort of just chasing this idea. It's all changed now, you know, because I've got like into it, but it was just basically, it felt like I was developing functional strength, you know? And it's like, I don't know if that's just tendon development or sometimes we talk about it as like farm strength, but like what kind of strength do you feel like bending attributed to for you? Was it like, did you feel like it was, gave you like that old time farm strength, like old man strength?
I think it did. Yeah. I think you could say that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's very isometric in nature. And it gives you the ability to use that strength, you know, not just in a gym, but in real life, that you can crank that strength up as hard as you want to go for real life things. You know, you look at things completely different. You look at things as, can I destroy that with my hands? Can I bend that? Can I reduce that to, you know, a pile of metal instead of just cruising through life? And that's fun. You know, that's awesome.
It certainly is a different mindset. I feel like out of, you know, all the people I've interacted with this, it's just like, I think it's just from taking this thing that seems impossible and then doing it and then progressing through, you know, the different difficulties in steel or so. The instance that comes to mind is recently I was talking to a former classmate of mine, and he was talking about how he wants to deadlift 500 pounds, but he doesn't know if he's built for it. This is a pretty big guy, right? And it was just like that little inkling of doubt in his mind. I was just like, man, like, you know, it was just like, I couldn't really relate to that. And I know that's because I've changed from knowing all of the people through this community and stuff like that. And it's just like, I don't think anyone I would be talking to on this podcast wouldn't be stopped by something like that. You know, it would just be like, oh, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and then I'll get it. Like, it would be without question, you know.
It's just a number, and, you know, you put the work in and then you do it. And and that's really as simple as that.
Exactly. So are you doing any training these days of any kind?
Yeah. So, in 2020, I tore a bicep, you know, trying to catch a dog that was stupid. We got a dog that was half Great Dane, half Greyhound, and apparently twice as fast as I expected when I put my arm out to try and get a hand on him.
Yeah.
So I didn't train from probably March of 2020 until July of this year.
Okay.
And then I started getting back in the gym like once a week. Nice. Before I stopped like training, before the injury, I was around 425 on bench. And I think, yeah. And, you know, various other stuff. That's a good indicator for me though, that I was really strong for me, at my age anyway. And, right now I'm probably back up around 345 ish, 350, somewhere in there.
Nice. So is that basically the goal right now, is to just build up those major lifts, or indeed you have any grip, stuff in mind, or is there anything that you're just like staying up at night thinking about as far as, in training, or not so much these days?
No, right. These days it's, am I going to be able to get my butt to the gym? I'm training grippers a little bit here and there, you know, maybe once a week, maybe once every couple of weeks, with just a goal to get kind of back up into a decent range for me. And, you know, I'm slowly working on a book on, gripper training here and there. Oh, cool. So I'll do some of the, you know, I'll rerun through some of the programs, here and there, portions of them, just to make sure stuff makes sense.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. Not anywhere near what I was, but still playing a little bit.
Yeah. That's good to hear. That's really good to hear. And how about injuries back when you were bending heavy? Was that ever anything you suffered from directly from bending?
Yeah. All right. Oh yeah. Let's see. I had probably 3 minor pec tears.
Okay.
I had, one time I dislocated my collarbone.
Really?
Like the AC joint.
Yeah.
That was pretty awful.
What was the recovery on that?
I don't remember how long that was. It was a while. It was months.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to speak to that one a little bit, I mean, basically I was trying to bend my first edging, I think. My first 7-inch by 5/16 grade 5 bolt. Mm-hmm. And just the slight amount longer that the head was on the bolt than the 7-inch stuff that I was used to, because of my biomechanics, it was too long.
Yeah.
And instead of getting my, being able to get my elbows in front of the bar and actually bend it, they were pushing straight in to the bar ends. And so that required some definite, you know, overlength work, starting much lower and working up to get stuff kind of stretched out. I ran into issues as I got heavier where my biceps were too big and I couldn't get the angle to get the elbows in front.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually bent a little better when I was a little lighter for the longer stuff because of that. Bone bruises on fingers, bone bruises on palms, skin tears. Yeah, some nasty splits over the years. I had to start taping up my middle finger knuckles with electrical tape because the bigger stuff would rip the side of the knuckle open.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeesh.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, those pec tears and that collarbone, those sound scary. That was like I started getting some serious irritation from the double overhand bending. And I just kind of cooled it on that because it was really affecting a lot of my other training. And it was when I was doing 7-inch stuff with the double wraps on it was really. And I'm only 5'7", so I don't really have like the greatest wingspan, you know, like to begin with. The 6-inch stuff has always felt a lot easier, but that was really irritating my shoulder. So I'm going to have to take your advice if I start picking up some double overhand again to go light and longer and work my way in.
it works really well. And I remembered Ben's last name, actually, Ben Edwards. He was the one that came up with that overlength program.
Oh, neat.
And it worked phenomenally well. I think I dropped down to like, you know, just 1/4-inch round soft steel and was doing volume with that. And then just worked my way back up. And it made all the difference in the world. It made the long stuff so much easier on my body when I could just get the mechanics right because everything was stretched out.
Makes total sense. All right. Well, I'm going to hit you with some of these listener questions and then we'll finish up and get you out of here. But so Jan Heller Horito asks, what do you think about bending these days? Do you keep track of what's going on bending wise at all or not so much?
I have no idea. I don't keep track of it. I don't keep track of hardly any grip stuff anymore.
Okay.
It's been really over 10 years since I did my last big bends.
Yeah.
So I haven't really kept track.
Another guy asked, do you have any current grip goals and do you still train grippers? You kind of just touched on this.
You know, I'd like to get back up into the over number 3.5 range. You know, a 4 would be great if I could get back to that, but it's been probably 5 years since the last time I closed a 4. I might be getting too old for it. we'll see. But you know, a 3.5 would be good. I think the last training session that I pushed it a little bit, I got a 160 for a triple. So
nice. Tom Lennox of Sweden, another really heavy hitter, up and comer, that's bending some huge stuff already. He said, he asked if you miss bending, and what made you stop?
I do miss it sometimes. You know, the feeling that you get when you're bending something huge and you got this crazy isometric contraction that's going from your ears to your belly button.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really anything like that. Just bending. And it's awesome. Totally. As to why I stopped bending, I was just chasing other big goals, like bigger grippers, bigger pinch. And I just couldn't recover when I was bending huge stuff too. It just didn't, my body couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then it slowly fell off.
Right. Right. Former guest and good buddy, Andy Thomas, said, ask him about the gripper program he designed. I was one of the guys that used to test the program back in the day, and the thing broke me down so much I got the flu.
I can't remember which one he did, but I put a few test programs out there over the years, and you know, some of them were pretty intense. he was probably doing one of the pretty intense ones.
Yeah. All right, let's see what else. Devin Hoover asked about your website for steel ratings. He was asking, or how basically how were you rating that stuff, and if you have any plan for updating it.
So there was a method that Eric Milfield came up with for rating the steel many years ago. He was doing it when I first started grip already for a time. And his method was basically he would attach a cable or chain to a bar with some heavy duty U-clamps, and then attach the center of the bar to, I want to say, a fully loaded, you know, barbell. Mm-hmm. And then he would have something that he would deadlift, you know, attached to the chain or something like that. I forget exactly how he did it, because I did mine a little bit different, but he would increase weight and, you know, deadlift these up or hand thigh lift these up until he could get a 30 degree permanent bend in the bar.
Right.
With the setup that I used, I was using an engine hoist.
Okay.
And a custom built loading pin that would go to about 1,000 pounds that I made. And I would increase in weight up until I could get a permanent 30 degree bend with the same specific mounting points as what Eric was doing. Mm-hmm. That's how those bars were rated. So gotcha. All the ratings on the website are either done by him for the original ones or through my method, using that setup.
Nice.
And I've since loaned out the engine hoist, and it's, you know, long gone, like probably 10 years gone. So it's unlikely that I would be adding it to any more there. I think someone else was doing rating too, that I added some of their stuff.
Okay.
You know, in the last few years, but I don't know of anybody who's rating with that method anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And last question was, my friend Josh Goldthorpe that I mentioned earlier said, is it worth it to buy a Thomas Inch replica dumbbell?
It depends on your goal.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's your goal, then yeah, sure. Buy one. I bought one when it was my goal, and when nobody was making them anymore. It took me a year of chasing them on eBay before I finally got one from Michigan.
Oh, fun.
And have it Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And had it freighted across the country. It just depends on your goal. You know, if that's your goal, then, you know, you won't be able to try it unless you go to a contest or buy one.
Right.
For me, the inch was one of the hardest feats for me because of my hand, you know, length. I got big hands, but short fingers. And so when I would hold on to the inch, I had more than an inch between my thumb and tip of my middle finger.
Right.
Yeah. And it totally felt like a pinch lift versus a supporting lift. So that was a really hard feat for me. But for some people, you know, the first one they touch, they'll just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can get loadables too, where they're plate loadable.
I see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be the way to go, I think, to start. All right. Before we get you out of here, I do a rapid fire series of questions called the medley. So first question is favorite thing to bend, meaning material.
8620. Awesome. It is freaking ridiculous.
All right. Hardest thing to bend for you as far as material goes.
8620. So the smallest diameter with the highest load, and there's no spring to it. It either moves or it doesn't. And you move it a little at a time.
Yeah.
So a 5/16 on bent on that might be 700 pounds.
Oh. Strongest bending style. I think we know what that is.
Double overhand,
correct?
Yeah.
Weakest bending style?
Double underhand.
Did you ever get into much brace bending or horseshoes or anything like that during your time?
A little. We had some contests where we ran some brace bending and some medleys where we had horseshoes. I never bent any really big horseshoes. I think the biggest that I bent was like a Diamond Classic, you know, one of those kind of mid-level Diamond Classics.
Yeah.
For braced, I think I did a 12-inch by half inch bar. Braced and probably like a 40-inch by 3/4.
Yep.
And maybe like a 23 by 5/8, something like that. But yep. it was really variable depending on the steel, as everybody knows.
That way. Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, like in my mind, the explosive strength that you'd have from throwing would translate well to those 23-inch bars in that area. Like that seems like a lot of torque and the core, and I would think you'd be very powerful in that way.
It was fun. I liked it.
that style of bending, I was saying on the last couple of episodes, actually, was I feel like those, when I was really into the 5/8 and going shorter and shorter, like I felt like those really took it out of me. Like I needed like it was just like a full body, like soreness, you know, and it was like took a long time to recover from. Like it just getting in the awkward position and hooking the bar in the crook of your elbow, if that's the way you do, and like having to torque it like that, just seemed very taxing. Like those were rough
ones. Brace bending is one of those things where you're going to be sore absolutely everywhere on your body, from your toes to your top of your head, if you're going hard.
Yeah.
Because you're using absolutely everything, and it's a big isometric contraction for, you know, multiple seconds every time you hit it.
Yeah, totally. All right. Something outside of bending and grip and strength sports that you enjoy. So some other hobby outside the strength world.
Boy, that's a good question.
You can't just say nothing, because David Wigren, when he was on early, he just so stone cold blank face said, I don't enjoy anything outside strength. And
well, you know, I enjoy learning. I enjoy researching whatever is interesting at the time, whether it's in my work field or, you know, biomechanics or, you know, whatever it is. If it's something that I don't know that I'm learning about, it's interesting. I like doing machining still. I like doing fabrication with welding and other stuff. I like doing electronics fabrication and, you know, programming for microcontrollers and stuff, you know, whatever comes along. If it's a stretch for me, I enjoy it.
Cool. That's a good answer. And boy, if that is what you like, and you do get into podcasts, you're going to be fully into podcasts. All right. What's the one bend that got away? Something that maybe you don't have one, but something that you had attempted and could never complete. But since maybe you kept right on that razor's edge, maybe there isn't one.
I don't think I ever did. I don't think I ever completed a 6-inch by 5/16 square. Okay. stainless.
Yeah.
I did it in regular steel. Yeah, that was one that got away.
Cool. All right. Who's the strongest person you know? This is a question that could be like your dad or grandpa or something like that. Some guy from your town, or just, you know, this could be like some power lifter, famous strongman, you know. Totally open-ended to you.
No idea. I don't keep track.
Okay. Best piece of advice you were ever given?
That I was ever given?
Yeah.
Don't give up. Cool. Commit 100%. Don't give up.
And funniest reaction a person has had when they found out you spent your time bending pieces of steel?
They asked me if it was spoons. And this has happened more than once. Are you bending spoons? No, I'm not bending spoons.
That's a weird one.
Are you bending them with your mind?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Usually when I end it, I ask the people, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show? Any suggestions of someone I should get on here?
Pat Pavlaitis would be a good one if you could get him on.
I'm working on it. So hopefully that one will happen. My friend, fellow New Yorker, Steve Wiener, is working on that one for me too.
That would be a good one.
I had Steve on the show and it was a great, long, cool, fun, very fun and funny episode. And he's been putting in a good word with Pat for me. So hopefully we'll get that one.
Awesome.
I'm also trying for Dennis Rogers, but
I've met Dennis, but we're not close. Had a couple of meals with him when I was out in Texas visiting family.
Cool.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he'd be up for doing a podcast.
Right.
He's kind of private.
How about tips and advice for beginner benders?
Don't give up.
Boom.
You know, okay. Jump in there, and if you can't bend it today, keep trying and you will bend it. And then
that's it.
Find the next biggest thing. And if you can't bend it today, keep trying and you will bend it.
That's it.
And that's all you can do. Just rinse and repeat over and over. And you'll before you know it, you're a strong bender.
Yep. All right, Aaron. Anything else you want to say in closing?
Thank you much for the opportunity to talk about the awesome sport of bending. And, you know, I hope that everybody out there has a great day.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much for coming on, man. And I'll be in touch soon. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.